Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 in Chicago with a live studio audience. There you have it. Yes, another exciting live studio audience. We have, speaking of exciting, we have an exciting, riveting podcast for you today called Riveting Romance. And why are we talking about Riveting Romance? Because my lovely, wonderful, amazing wife, Suri, gave a class about dating to our young professionals today. And it was perfect timing for her to do that because in this week's Torah portion that we had just read in Parshas Chayesara, it deals with how to find a spouse, how to date, and how to find Mr. or Mrs. Right. And so I thought with that power pack combination, we should delve into this subject. And I'm a little bit fired up, which means it's going to be an exciting podcast. So fasten your seatbelts, and here we go. Now, needless to say, and if you don't know this, like if you have been married for many, many, many years, and you don't know what the dating scene is amongst post-college, well, anyone, but I deal with Jewish young professionals, I would say certain words come to mind. Disaster, total meltdown, depressing. Other words also come to mind that we will not say on Money Motivation Podcast. But really, if there is one area of pain, if there is a pain point of our young professionals, this is it. Rabbi, I want to find a nice Jewish girl. Rabbi, I want to find a nice Jewish boy. And I'm like, well, you're right here. Let's try. Okay. So the question is, why isn't it so easy? The Torah itself, the Midrash talks about that it really is not so easy. That what has God himself been doing since he finished creation after creating the Shabbos, the original Shabbos of the 7 days of creation? The Midrash says that he's been making matches. He's been deciding who's going to marry whom. And the Midrash continues and it says, ah, what are you talking about? This is a rabbi who was talking to a Roman matronisa, a royal Roman woman. And she says, no, I got this. What are you talking about? That's not so hard. That's all God's been doing since time immemorial. No, I can do it. So she got 100 of her male staff and 100 of her female staff. And she said, oh, you're going to be with you and you and you and you. And she made 100 matches. She married them off. The next day, it was not pretty. It was not pretty. No one was happy. And then she came back to the rabbi and said, yes, indeed, I see that this is a difficult thing that is deserving of the attention of the Almighty. Now, we have a lot of things that are in the way, which we'll get to that. But let's start with the Parsha. Let's start with the Torah portion of the week and get the Torah outlook on this, and then we're going to compare and contrast and see some of the obvious mistakes. However, people today are like fish swimming in a fishbowl of their own culture, and it takes a very special fish to jump out of the bowl into other waters to analyze that what they're swimming in. Well, we know what a fishbowl looks like when you don't change the water. But I digress. Here we go. We're in the Parsha. Avraham is now the patriarch of the Jewish people. His wife Sarah gave birth to Yitzchak, and sadly Sarah dies. And Avraham needs to find a shidduch, a match for his son Yitzchak. And he sends his trusty servant Eliezer to his homeland. So Avraham is in Israel, but he sends Eliezer all the way back to Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq, okay? Why? There were local girls there. There were Canaanite girls. In fact, Eliezer, his servant, was of Canaanite stock, and he had a worthy daughter, wink, wink. So what was going on? What was the problem? Why couldn't he take a local Canaanite girl? And the answer is very enlightening. Character. Character traits. What we call midos. The word for character traits in Hebrew is midos, which means measure. Limdod, you know, in Hebrew today, to measure something, say limdod. The midot are measurements. And even in English, we have an expression, the measure of a man or the measure of a person is his character. And that's true. Midos are very difficult to change. It takes a lot of work to change. If someone is a angry person, if someone is a stingy person, it's very hard to change something that's ingrained in one's natural character. It is possible. And Judaism and Torah focuses on making those changes, but it's tough and it's slow. And then the question comes, well, what was going on over in Mesopotamia? Why did Abraham send over there? They were idolaters. They were serving idols. Why is that better? And the commentators all say an unbelievable thing is that idolatry is just wrong ideas. Ideas can be changed. Ideas can be changed much more easily than bad character traits. And so therefore, we see something, a clarion call in terms of dating and finding the right person, finding your soulmate. The first thing to look for is obviously character. It's character and midos. And what type of midos character are we looking for? Okay, and so Eliezer goes back, he comes to the well, and he does something a little controversial. It's not our subject right now, but he kind of makes like what we call a goral, like almost like a lottery. And he says, like the girl, I'm paraphrasing, let it be, I'll read it. Let it be the maiden. We're in chapter 24, verse 14. Let it be that the maiden to whom I say, please tip over your jug so I may drink. And who replies, drink, and I will even water your camels. In other words, Eliezer says, the girl who's going to do that, some random stranger in the middle of Mesopotamia, right, that she's going to offer to do that, then she will be the right one. And literally, he stops speaking, and this girl, Rivka, comes out, who is actually Abraham's relative. And what happens? She's a beautiful little girl, and she runs, and she says, Eliezer says, oh, can I have a little water? And she says, yes, drink, my lord. And she gave him the drink. And only after he had completely finished drinking, then she says, I'll go get for your camels. Now, the Torah had previously said there were 10 camels there. We were having a game on Shabbos. How many times did Rivka have to go back to the well? Depending on how big her jug was, how big her bucket was, and how far the camels were, it could be up to 200 times, who knows, that Rivka had to run back and forth from the well to basically satiate 10 camels who had just made an international trip through the desert. That is the quality that Eliezer was looking for, and it worked out, and Rivka ends up being the wife of Yitzhak, because she was looking for the midos, the character traits of giving, of chesed, of kindness, and that is what it means to be part of Beis Avraham, the house of Abraham, the one who hosts guests even 3 days after his own circumcision at 99 years old. That's the type of people that we need to create, and that's the type of women that we need to continue. Now, as an aside, why camels? It's a very interesting thing. One-third of all the references to camels in the entire Tanakh, entire Jewish Bible, appear in this Torah portion. It's camels, camels, camels. Why? So camel is the word gamal. And actually, when we say acts of kindness, we say gemilut chasidim. We say camel kindness. It's a very funny thing. Why? So the commentators explain that a camel, how does it work? Once you fill it up, it goes on its own. In other words, that's the goal of chesed, of kindness, is to fill up another person so much that they won't need you anymore, that you're giving them so much. It means that you're other-centered, you're other-focused, and it's not about me. That is the midah. That's the character trait that Eliezer was looking for Yitzhak. Now, to say that, you know, there's not only in women, but in men as well. The kasuba, the contract that the man signs, if you're Sephardi or if you're Ashkenazi, you show that you agree to the contract and witness the sign, is the most unromantic contract in world history. Okay? Lest you think this is just a woman's obligation to be kind, no. The ketubah is literally all the obligations of a man to a woman in marriage, from clothing to food, to intimacy, to emotional satisfaction, to everything. And they actually read the kesuba under the chuppah in Aramaic between, it's like halftime between the two services that are happening in the marriage ceremony. So I always joke with the single men who are at the wedding. I said, why do they read it in Aramaic? I said, well, because if they read it in English, all the single men would bolt. They would be out of there. They'd be out of there in a second. You're kidding me? And there's a certain part of the wedding called the Chassan's Tish. It's the pregame show. And it's just the guys. And obviously, there's a lot of groomsmen there, a lot of single men. And I always take pleasure in telling them the Jewish outlook towards a man in marriage is that, unlike the secular world, a man becomes a man when he accepts the responsibility for one woman. Little boys lack the maturity to commit, and they stay playing the field for decades. The Baskin-Robbins flavor of the month, okay? And in Judaism, you man up. You become a man when you commit to one woman, and you're going to take care of her forever and ever. And that brings us today to the dating crisis. The dating crisis we mentioned at the beginning today. And I hear, Rabbi, there's no good guys out there. Rabbi, there's no good gals out there. You're both wrong. There are wonderful guys and gals out there. So what's the problem? Well, it's a bad system we're in, and we have a bunch of wrong ideas. So I want you to fasten your seatbelts, because I'm basically now going to challenge every single fiber of the essence of secular dating. You know why? Because it's awful. It's a train wreck, and I'm going to explain why. Okay, so back in the 1960s, and this is really, you know, Monday morning quarterback. You know, you think you have a great idea, and this is why I'm in awe of the rabbis who make a decree, and it lasts for thousands of years. Already, something that was initiated in the 1960s has 60 years later has left a train wreck of misery. And this was the sexual liberation, started in the 1960s. It's been the greatest enslavement of women and the greatest infantilization to men in world history. What do I mean? So, the old school way of getting married was, what I like to say, no tiki, no washi, right? You don't get your dry cleaning without the tiki, meaning full commitment for full access. The great commodity of intimacy can only be found in a permanent commitment of marriage. That's the only place where you can find it. Now women are quote unquote liberated. Men don't need to commit. They can play the field. They have all upside. They have dessert without eating their vegetables. And why should they? As the classic statement goes, why buy the cow when you get the milk for free? Why should they commit? And therefore, the men are infantilized because they're encouraged. They're encouraged to notch another victory, another score for their belt. And the women are enslaved because they have no opportunity but to give in. Because if they don't, no guy will date them. And so this is a really bad system. And I'd like to share some of the bad ideas. One of them we just said is that the more macho a man is, the more he plays the field. And that's actually just the opposite, because that encourages an animalism. And it encourages the superficiality of relationships that's driven by physical-based desires and drives. It used to be that women were united in this. That all women knew that they weren't going to give in. They were going to wait till they were married. And therefore, men also had to go in to this marriage idea. I give the analogy of a stock portfolio. If there's three stocks in a portfolio, two of them are worth $1 million and one of them is worth $1 billion. And you take that $1 billion stock out of the portfolio, you have devalued the portfolio. So that $1 billion stock is called intimacy. And when you take that out of the portfolio of marriage, you've devalued marriage. And it's no wonder that it's been a straight line crash of marriages since the late 60s. Divorce rates through the roof. Why? Because we've devalued the entire institution. There's another terrible idea called, I need experience. It's actually ridiculous. You don't need experience, you need vetting, which we're going to get to. And now, here we go. Bad idea number three is romance. Oh, romance. Romance, the stuff of Netflix, the stuff of Hollywood movies, even Disney. We inculcate this idea into our children from a very young age, this poison, this spiritual and emotional cyanide poison, we inject at a very young age, and then we go to the park, spend thousands of dollars for a few days there, and I digress. But this idea of romance, that you are going to fall in love, the Greeks tortured us with this idea of Cupid, and he shoots an arrow, and you're totally not in control, and you're struck by this feeling of romance, and is whoever you are struck by, you decide to build a relationship with, and that ends up literally building a building on quicksand, because riveting romance of this variety lasts for about 6 minutes or maybe 6 days, okay, or maybe 6 months. But it's not going to last. And the next bad idea flows right from this, is that love conquers all. Oh, I hear that all the time. Love conquers all. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. Love evaporates very quickly. But compatibility in values and in character and life goals, that does conquer all. When you're on the same page with values, with character, with life goals, then that is a solid relationship that can storm the greatest, stormiest seas that life will bring you on your journey. And I want to transition now into proper dating. Proper dating, yes, there is a value judgment happening here. Secular dating stinks, and it's not just the Orthodox rabbi saying that. I am just parroting back everything that I've heard for the last 20 years on frontline dealing with people. And so I'd like to tell you what proper dating is like. First thing, you got to know yourself. You got to know yourself. You got to know who you are. Got to know what makes you tick, what's important to you, what you want in another person. That's about knowing yourself. And this is the hard part. It means that before you date, you got to do the hard work of defining who you are. The second thing is you have to have a basic life vision, an outline, a plan. It doesn't mean you know who you're going to work for, where you're going to live exactly, but what basic path does your life? Do you want to, are you okay living what we call a COLA life? You're going to be a wife or a husband who's going to live on a limited budget, but dedicate yourself to Torah learning. No, that's not for me. I want to have a little more of a wealthier lifestyle and still live a beautiful Jewish life and everything's kosher. But which path am I going on? And the third and most difficult thing for our secular friends in the world is to date for marriage. You got to date for marriage. Dating is not for fun. Go out with your girlfriends or your boyfriends or whatever, your frats and sororities. That's why there are frats and sororities, because everyone knows you have more fun hanging out with your same gender. Everyone knows that. So when you date, you have to date for marriage. And this is so obvious. And the way that I bring this out all the time, and maybe it's just because I'm a sports guy, but what can I tell you? The NFL draft. Now, can you imagine the importance of a first-round draft pick from the end of the Super Bowl? It's sometime in early February, all the way through the end of April, when the draft of the college draft for football happens. There are probably, without exaggeration, millions, hundreds of millions of human hours spent, not just the teams, the people on the radio and thinking and the commentators and, you know, the fantasy football and who's going to be on what team. They're vetting them. Who's going to be the best fit? And why? Because there's millions of dollars you're going to pay that person, that player, but also the entire future of the franchise could hinge on one player. And everyone in sports knows that. So an important idea, an important pick, an important choice needs vetting, needs preparation. A PhD dissertation needs preparation. Your standardized tests, your SATs, ACTs, GMATs, MCATs, you fill in the name, need preparation. You're not just going to go into the test unprepared, right? But what do? Our culture, we hop in the shower, dress up, put on some cologne or perfume, and go insert ourselves in a pool of people who most likely have little to no chance of being the franchise player. And then we sign the contract that night. and your draft picks are wasted after a night or a week. And that is a churban. That is a destruction. I cannot tell you the emotional toll of these quick one-night stands, one-week relationships, two-week relationships. It destroys the emotional core of people to the nth degree. And here's where I just have to crack up about this. Suri ran a beautiful book club today. A bunch of people signed up, and it was amazing. You know, we didn't recruit so hard for it. It was the first time. Okay, a bunch of people signed up for it. And if you looked at the age bracket of these amazing women, every woman who was there today was absolutely amazing. But it was very interesting to note that it was literally from 28 to 39. Those were the women who showed up. Most of them were in their 30s, and they're all amazing. But there was not one girl, 22 to 27, who signed up for this of just a Sunday brunch, very short. Talk about dating. Date with intentionality. Date not one. Not one. Why not? Because they're brainwashed that they're going to bump into Mr. Right without vetting, without planning, or any preparation, or any intentionality. And so either they're going to end up with a 10th round draft pick who ends up being a spouse because we've already spent 4 years together, which usually ends in divorce within the first 5 years because we were never compatible in the first place. The secular world gets this all wrong. I'm only touching on a few points over here. It's exciting. It's flashy. It's fun. But secular dating is poison. And Suri, my wife Suri and I have spent the last 20 years trying to inject some Torah sanity to an insane dating world. The Torah path requires self-analysis and discipline and focus and delayed gratification. But because of that, the riveting romance blossoms into a lifetime of true love. I give everyone a blessing that you will find the right one, which means finding yourself first. And it means doing the hard work first. And it means saying no to a very flashy and loud outside world. But you've got this. There's too much at stake. If the NFL teams don't want to waste a first-round draft pick, don't waste yours, the first-round draft pick of a lifetime, your franchise player. God bless. And may Hashem guide you and your life in the ways of the Torah. And God willing, we will see you right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.